Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of All Up In Your Business with First Union Lending. I'm Chad. I'm here with Dennis.
What's up, guys? I am back. I know I was missed, and I'm just not going to give up on you. I'm okay. Here.
Adriana.
Hi.
And Tim.
What's up, people?
So today we're going to be talking about keeping realistic business expectations.
Yeah.
So let's start with some biz news.
So this week, biz news comes from CNBC. Everyone has heard the saying, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. But is that true?
No.
Okay. Apple CEO Tim Cook does not agree with this statement. Cook says, at Apple, I learned this is total crock. This is what he says.
A total crock.
Like a crock of shit.
Yep. He says, when you find a job you're passionate about, you will work hard and you won't mind doing so. Cook says, you will work harder than you ever thought possible, but the tools will feel light in your hands. Cook joined Apple at the request of the iconic entrepreneur Steve Jobs. He was inspired by the part of the larger purpose behind the products. He says at the time, Apple was on the verge of bankruptcy. He didn't want to join Apple because of the products, but he joined because of the values behind the products. The idea of putting powerful tools in the hands of people every day is what gave him the passion and motivation to love the work he does. And he did this speech. It was a commencement speech.
Yeah, that makes a little more sense, right? I mean, the whole saying of find your passion and you'll never work a day in your life is pretty much garbage. Because if you think that it's going to be all fun and games to run a business, you were sorely mistaken.
Guys, check me out on TikTok, First Union Lending's TikTok, because I go through some of this stuff. Everybody wants to follow their passion. Everybody wants to do what they love, okay? But if you enjoy painting, you know, murals at Central Park, that's not going to get you paid, right? First, focus on making some money, getting some income, getting some good income, invest some money, make some money, and then you can go sit at fucking Central Park all day long and watch people jog by. But
that
you know,
sounds boring.
It some does sound boring, but some people love that. That's their passion.
Look, right? I have a passion for people watching.
Well,
painting.
Oh, you said sitting and watching people walk by. I misunderstood. Well,
walk by and painting them.
Oh, got it. Okay, right. Understood.
So focus on getting money first. This is very simple. You know, and then once you have money, you can do whatever you want. Whatever that crazy passion is, you want to pick up cello, you want to go bird watching, whatever you want to do. But that's not going to pay you. Get paid first.
Well, what if you like are looking for a bird, you shoot that bird, and then you sell that bird?
Well, I shot a bird one time out of a tree when I was young.
Did you make any money?
My dad was a hunter. He forced me to eat the fucking bird.
Gross. What kind of bird was it?
It was like a robin.
He made you eat the bird?
Well, he's like, if you're going to kill it,
you're going to eat it, yeah. He made me eat the bird.
That's one hell of a life lesson.
I stopped shooting stuff with BB guns after that.
Yeah.
It was not tasty.
Probably not too tasty.
Yeah. Not very much meat on the bones.
What did it taste like?
Chicken.
It always tastes like chicken. Everything tastes like chicken. Yeah.
Except for chicken.
Well, let me add something. First off, what are you passionate about? It all depends. If you're passionate about street painting or whatever the case, or you're passionate about helping people, for example, there's a lot of passionate creating something that would help people in the long run. So you have to ask yourself a question. In order for me to help someone or find a solution, first I have to help myself. I cannot help other people before I help myself. So I have to be as exactly what Dennis just said. You have to be on solid financial ground. First, you help yourself. No matter how you look at it, you figure out the way, help yourself, build some foundation, and then you can start building on your passion to help other people. It's just a simple word saying. It doesn't matter what you do. I mean, this is basics of how to get there, because without helping yourself, how can you help someone else?
Yeah.
You know? So this idea of build it and they will come, again, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, this is, people live by this kind of crazy stuff. I mean,
they're probably not business owners, though, or very successful ones.
Very unsuccessful.
Right.
What are you going to do, Frank? Become unsuccessful?
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to some listener questions.
Yeah. So the first question goes to Dennis. It's from Tyler.
What's up, Tyler?
Yep. He asks, why did you choose to create a business in the current industry you are in? What inspired you?
A lot of people say, you know, it's very difficult to do things. I'm one of those people that when you tell me I can't do something or I shouldn't do something, that I'm going to go do it. And, you know, obviously getting into banking of sorts and, you know, creating essentially a bank of sorts, you know, it's something that was not expected, right? It's something that you can't just go do. And so that kind of drove me. So the haters propelled me there, right? Or the naysayers, as our good buddy Grant Cardone says, right? You either have your naysayers, which are your people that are around you. They love you. And they're just like, hey, don't waste your time doing that because you're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your haters. You know, those haters drive you to do these things, right? So why this specific industry? You know, we get to help hundreds of and thousands of businesses, right? Business owners. At First Union Lending, we don't just, you know, lend money, right? We act as a free consultant. We solve problems. We solve people's financial headaches. And we get to make money doing it because, as we know, the bankers got all the money. Right? So
all so the money.
They get all the money. But, you know, so, you know, it's a good business to be in. But, yeah, the main thing is that we're able to assist people and actually make a change in people's lives. And that's important. But I also want to make a change in my life, right? You know, I'll do my volunteering and all that kind of stuff and try to help change lives in that sense. Or donations or, you know, whatever, philanthropy. Right,
big philanthropist.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, big philanthropist. But you know, and that's a way to help people. But another, you know, I have to help myself in the meantime. I have to help my family. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, this is probably kind of what drove me to be where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Good answer.
Good answer.
Perfect.
One take, Dennis.
One take, Jay-Z.
All right. Next questioner.
It's the bottom one.
Is from Mateo. Mateo asks, I work in marketing, but I am not creative. What do I do?
You need to sit down with yourself and think about
you make better choices.
Maybe reconsider.
I'm sorry, Mateo. You have to sit down with yourself and see and think about if you want to be in this industry. If you truly love marketing, there are other, majority of it is being creative.
Right.
So, but there is a small field you can go into that if you truly want to pursue marketing. So there's analyst positions, account management, accounting, budgets, and project managers. They don't really deal with the creative side. They more manage and like look over finances and stuff like that. If that's what you're good at. If you want to stay in marketing, I say you kind of do have to be creative. If you don't want to go in those jobs, let's say work on yourself.
Yeah. I don't know how you like get into something that you are just like, I'm really bad at this, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And nice. Then I'm going to ask people how to do it.
Yeah. You got to be more self-aware.
I've seen a lot of people actually, you know, do something they're not good at and they become decent at it. Right. I mean, we hire people here that have no experience.
That's true.
You know, and we train them and eventually we create, you know, amazing employees out of them because, you know, proper training and so on and so forth. So can you train yourself to be more creative? I don't know.
I don't think creativity is like a skill as much as like a trait. Like,
yeah, are just not born like I know I'm very visual, but my sister isn't like she can't. She can't like just look at something and just picture it. Well, I can.
Yeah.
She's not, doesn't have that.
When I was in college, we had to do a lot of, like we did some of these tests and they were like right brain, left brain tests.
I think left brain's your creative side, right brain is you're more analytical.
Totally forget.
I think it's the other way around.
I think it's the other way. I think right brain is more creative. Oh, left brain is.
It crosses. So it's like one goes that way. One
whatever it is. Yeah. I'm not sure. But I remember taking the test and it was like, I fell very high on the creative side and like, they're like, yeah, okay. You know, you are meant for this. I don't remember the, why we had to take this test. I think it was more just like.
I think I took it too in psychology.
This was actually in like our multimedia design courses. Like they made us take these tests. Now I'm thinking, I'm like, why did they do that? Like, it's not like a placement. They're not like, oh, you wouldn't be good for this. Get the hell out of here.
Maybe trying to get you to weed yourself out.
Yeah. Like self-awareness, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. Like it wasn't like one of the first semesters that we took this either. It was like
pretty
far
deep in.
Yeah. They're like, okay, now you've already spent 2.5 years or a year and a half here. Let's see if you're kind of meant for this.
Yeah.
$40,000.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
I think you can develop those skills, but to a certain point, you can develop creativity in you. But obviously to become extremely talented in this field is just, I think in my opinion, it's a gift.
Yeah. You have to be creative.
Exactly. You have to be like that. But you can develop those, but, you know.
Yeah. So just sit down with yourself. And if you say you hate marketing, move on. Find another field.
That's probably some of the best advice you can give. Like, if you really are not good at it, you don't consider yourself creative, and you don't like the work.
Yeah, just get out of
it. Maybe do something else.
Yeah.
I agree.
Words to live by.
Yeah.
Agreed.
All right, Tim. This next question's from Avi. Hey. Oh, no, Chad.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Tim.
Not yet.
So he asks, what are five essential skills every web developer should have?
Well, there's more than five. And I was kind of like mentioning that a little bit earlier.
He's like, there's more than five.
Yeah. So I'll just take it from like more of a literal sense, like things that you need to know, need to be like educated in, right? First things first, no matter what you're going to do in like web development, you need to know HTML and CSS. These are like, that's like the backbone of like web development. If you don't know HTML and CSS, then that's your starting point. You've got to learn this first. Next, I would say JavaScript would be a second. It's incredibly popular for front end and back end development. We've kind of brought this up quite a few times, so that's kind of a no-brainer.
Especially in the last podcast.
Listen.
Dennis is hating on our last podcast.
It's not my fault you weren't here. And we talk about what we knew.
Yeah, marketing and tech.
And we,
it's all we have.
We killed it.
Yes, absolutely. It was killed.
Hater.
He's a hater.
You're just talking about haters and naysayers.
Inspire us more.
Yeah.
But I love you, so I'm a naysayer.
Oh, okay.
I don't want you to do bad.
Block him. Block him.
Just want you to be better. That's all. Oh.
kill the doubt. Starve it.
Oh, boy. All right. So third on my list would be version control. And basically that's, anyone who's already getting into it will likely know what this is, but there's an application. Well, it's not just an application. It's like a full service. It's called Git. And this is what you use to save changes to your code. So any iterative change that you make, you're going to basically make a comment. You're going to save your code, but also make a comment so that you know what you did. And this also becomes incredibly helpful if you're working, like collaborating with other developers and other designers. You need to keep track of the things that you've done. Version control is very important. Number four on my list would be learning the command line.
Okay.
So this is how you're going to like traverse code through the command line. It's going to be something that you're going to live in quite a bit if you're doing development. It doesn't matter if you're doing front-end development or back-end development. The command line is something you're going to have to become friends with.
Okay.
My number five would be an ability and a desire to learn, because you are going to be doing a lot of that on a regular basis. Developers end up doing a lot of reading and research and keeping up with trends and learning what is new and coming out, and even just changes to languages and frameworks. You have to know what changes are coming and how to take advantage of those for your up-and-coming projects. And also look for like vulnerabilities and other things like this. So.
Okay.
Learning is going to be something that you're going to be doing for the rest of your career as a developer.
So the question was more, you know, what essential skills do you need, right?
Yeah, what five essential skills?
What five skills, but, you know, I mean, you could go a little more broad with that, so I was just going a little more literal.
Shouldn't, like, one of the skills be the ability to be organized, right? I mean, if you're not organized, I mean, and we have a lot of people who aren't, right?
Yeah.
Can you successfully write code if you're, like, scatterbrained, right? I mean, you
know. It's going to make it very tough if you are scatterbrained. But this kind of goes back to like Adriana's question, right? If you
you have to know who you are,
you have to know know thyself, right? You have to understand how you operate and like the things that you're into and the things that you're not. And so if you are not able to stay organized and you know keep track of anything or even just focus for long periods of time, then yeah, coding may not be for you. But I will say that when you start coding and like go through the process, it might take years. It might take 1 year, 2 years. It might take 10 years for that for some people. But you start, it changes the way that you think. You've got to keep certain things in mind. And I find that like I start thinking about things differently as I've progressed with development.
You start kind of applying it to the rest of your life, so to speak, right? I mean, you.
Well, it's like not even intentional, right? It's like process. It just happens, because when you're making anything, when you're coding something, you have to think like an engineer, in many cases, you have to understand, okay, if I do this, then I need to take care of this and that. I don't want to go, I can't really give any specifics, but yeah, you've got to like build, everything's got to build on top of its, of itself or of each other. So without without staying organized, it's going to be pretty rough.
And you've got to have a thick skin, right? I mean, you've got to have some patience because
lots of that.
I see you at some points, basically continuing to pull out what's left of your hair.
You're self-motivated too, because you have to keep keep going.
I mean, you're going to hit points that in any project that is, you're going to get frustrated. One of the worst things that can happen is you have a syntax error in your code and you have got to find a missing period or a semicolon or whatever, just silly things sometimes. And it takes a little while to find it. I saw this like meme a little while ago and it said what people think developers do. And it shows some guy like sitting behind, like in a dark room, and he's typing really fast and the computer screens are like filling up with code. And, it looks like he's doing something really cool. And then it shows what development really is like. And it shows a guy just staring at a screen with a mouse cursor, just kind of scrolling.
Understood.
Uh-huh. Dennis.
That was my phone. Uh-oh. Sorry.
It's all right. We'll give you a pass.
Block him. Block him.
Turn my mic off.
Mute. Cool. Yeah, that was it.
So the next question is for Tim. It's from Ariana. So she asks, I want to open a retail store. Do you think now during the pandemic and maybe an upcoming recession is the best time? Probably not.
It's a fun question.
Sorry, Ariana.
Well, let me start off with this. So you have to first ask yourself a question. What kind of product you're selling? This is the most important thing. So some products, they cannot be sold online. No matter what you do, no matter what kind of pictures you put out there, no matter how you're going to promote, there's no way you can sell. Certain products, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Home Depot is a great example. Yeah, you have a bunch of stuff online. Yeah, Amazon sometimes have a good prices. But the issue is sometimes it's easier to pick it up right away, take it home, and put it up, and then wait for the stuff to come from China, for example. Because I experienced myself, there's no way Amazon can compete with those guys like Home Depot, Lowe's. Another example, something boutique or something exclusively made or something antique, something with antique stores, for example, old shelves or whatever the case is, mirrors.
Like super niche kind of deal?
Yeah, something that cannot be sold online. So in that case, it's just impossible to compete with you, because especially if you position yourself locally as a place where people can go to, and you market yourself within certain region where people can drive to and see. Mm-hmm. I think you can be really successful, in my opinion. So not all retail stores can be replaced with online. I know it's going there slowly.
Yeah,
well, but you can't buy 2x4s or a sheet of plywood on Amazon, right? So.
Yeah,
not yet.
Yeah, it just depends.
Yeah, so another example, convenience stores. Like, we all know all those around the corner convenience stores where you can just grab something really quick. Mm-hmm. You're not going to wait for the, for example, cigarettes for 3 days or for 2 weeks from Amazon simply because they're 20 cents cheaper. You just want it now. You don't care how much you're going to pay.
It's so, an impulse.
Yeah, impulse buying, or it's just a habit. Some people have bad habits, and then they just.
he looks right over at Dennis.
You run out of cigarettes at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're not gonna wait until Amazon delivers them, right? I mean,
you gotta
go to the store right away.
So it's another example. So what I'm trying to say is just certain products. You have to ask yourself a question. Okay, is it easier for someone to copy my business model, put online, and sell? Mm-hmm. Then you're gonna go out of business quick.
So in other words, that's how you would apply it to like somebody trying to start a business during the recession or whatever. You've got to have like a product that is 10 times better or,
doesn't
or
matter.
More to accessible me, to everybody.
Exactly.
To
me, recession
can't be sold online.
No, recession is not a factor to start the business. Matter of fact, you'd be more successful in a recession if you start the business. The issue is a product. What are you selling?
Got it.
You have to ask yourself, your question is, can it be easy copied online? So it's
that's true.
Yeah, if you start in a recession, basically you end up in a situation where you're starting in the worst of the worst, right? If you can make it through that, as things improve with the economy, you'll blow it up, right?
Didn't some of the Uber, Airbnb, some other ones started in the 2008 recession?
Did they?
I think so.
I don't know what year it started, but there you go. I mean, but they're still not really profitable, are they?
No, but still, they made it.
the people, who started it are very rich.
Yeah, sure.
Regardless of whether the company's profitable or not.
Fair enough.
No, I mean, again, if you're starting a normal retail store like everyone else and you're in competition with Targets of the world, Walmart, then you have to figure out how to position yourself online digitally.
Yeah.
And then that way the people could find you and then buy from you online. You can do both. You see those great examples of Walmart doing this. It's like in-store pickups and you know, things like deliveries. Now everything's possible. Even delivery is possible. You can partner up with Instacart. They'll be delivering for you. But you have to figure out how it's going to eat into your margins and, you know what I'm saying, how people will get to know you. So it's just harder in this environment.
Yeah, for sure.
All the stuff that's going on.
But not impossible?
Not impossible. Nothing's impossible.
Nothing's impossible.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, it's crazy when you see some of these stories of people that, you know, they're small businesses, they go online, they make a product, but it's not like it's not something necessarily incredibly unique. Maybe they have a feature or something that they've, you know, a leg up on, but they'll go overseas to China and they'll get China to make the product for them. And sometimes China just sucks. Like, I've seen this so many times where somebody will find a product, they'll make a different version of it or a slight variation or even just, like, you know, change colors or add a small something, some kind of change to it. And then they start, you know, building up their business, they make the sales, and then at some point in time, that company, that Chinese manufacturer will probably rip you off. There's no patent control really in China.
They are starting to get more serious about IP simply because the U.S. is pushing it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they're starting to lose some business over there, right, due to IP law. So they are putting some stuff in place where they will get a little tighter on that. But, you know, it'll never, not in the next 20 years probably, be to the level that it is.
It's going to take time. I mean, like, even if a law gets put in place, that's usually like, all right, we're putting this law in place, and by 2027, you'll be, it's like, okay, well, my business can't last 7 years before this rule goes into place. It's just not going to work.
Your Chinese accent was horrible.
That was not a Chinese accent at all. I didn't try. I'm not going to try.
No, don't try.
I'm not going there.
But speaking of, you know, this concept, like, think about this, retail stores. Like, some stores you just cannot, it's nothing you can, Chinese, they cannot copy your stuff because you people have to come to see it. Like, I give you a great example. Restoration Hardware is a store. Mm-hmm. They sell $30,000 couches. People buy, there's $20,000 to $30,000. They research, but this is, hey, you know, you come into this nice, great showroom. You're going to see this expensive stuff. It's for a certain market.
Very specific market.
Exactly. Some galleries. Some galleries. Mm-hmm. People with money will not buy stuff online. They're great paint, you know, great artwork. They're not going to come. They're going to come to gallery to see it.
Yeah. Right.
So want to see. So it's like, I was in Europe, for example, a few years ago, and then I saw the guys actually selling $6,000 dresser. But it was a antique piece from like hundreds of years old.
Okay. But
very nice, heavy, actual wood is really made really nice. I was laughing. I'm like, who's going to buy it from me? No. So people come, but people buy this kind of stuff because they want to sell exclusive product. Is there any reason, you know, how you position yourself, in my opinion?
Yeah.
So it's a musical instrument. You cannot buy this stuff online. You have to see it. You have to play.
Mm-hmm.
You have to figure out how it sounds. So there's a lot of, you have to come to showroom. A lot of products, you have to come to showroom.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, for extremely wealthy people such as myself.
Okay.
kidding. Dennis is such a modest human being.
Yeah. Kidding. But, you know, but those people are going to be the first during a recession, right, to start protecting their capital. I don't think they're going to go out and start buying, you know, $30,000 couches.
Yeah, which is a statement. It's a statement piece, basically. Right. Like, yeah.
And especially you're in COVID, you can't have anybody at your house anyway. So who are you trying to impress with your $30,000 couch? Nobody can sit on.
Yeah, your cat or your other family members or
I've seen what your cats have done to your couches.
I don't know what you know.
Well, back in the day.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah,
it happens. It's the worst.
No, it's, again, it's type of customer. If you have $5 million house, you're not going to put IKEA in this house. You have to think about it. So, you know, because you're going to have a
maybe you're very just upscale. Keep your current couch. Because why buy a $30,000 couch?
No, people, you
I think that
it.
I have to argue with you on that one. So the other day, and this is why, literally like 2 days ago, Alina was watching TV, and there was an interview with 50 Cent on there. And he's in his big house, in his office, and on each side of behind his desk are two IKEA shelves, and I know that they're IKEA shelves.
Well, because gentlemen, you have them? No. Gentlemen, you can see his videos. The gentleman actually declared himself bankrupt, broke, no money, and then they found, and then they showed videos that he was hiding cash in a freezer, I believe. Yeah.
What? Was it like cars? Didn't he have it like in the trunks of cars or something?
There's a purpose for it. Yeah, listen,
the guy did not go bankrupt. So what really happened, right? Him and Rick Ross were. Why do I know so much about this?
Yeah, I know.
him and Rick Ross were having this feud, right? As rappers do, and so one day, 50 Cent invited Rick Ross's ex-wife or ex-girlfriend, who he has a kid with, over to 50 Cent's house. Mm. So she came. She hung out. They did some videos. Obviously, he ended up,
you like music videos.
It went further. And then he intentionally released those videos to piss Rick Ross off that he was now.
So it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's now banging his baby's mama. And so he had no authorization to release those videos, got sued for $5 million. And, you know, the natural inclination is, hey, I'm not paying you shit. I'm just going to go declare bankruptcy, even though I'm not technically bankrupt. So. Yeah. But he still has IKEA shelves. He's got to keep up the appearances.
Sure thing.
No, I honestly don't think it matters. I agree with that. I mean, they're like, look at Zuckerberg. He's reading, like, wearing T-shirts, and, you know, like, you think you meet the guy without knowing who it was. You're like, oh, yeah, you know, but actually, guy has billions. So clearly, it's nothing to do with the. But people, believe it or not, I mean, the company is doing really well.
Yeah,
French company selling $30,000 couches and $20,000 couches. I mean, this. Sell a lot, so there is a customer base. They want to have a good time on the 20. You know
what you don't realize is, like, Zuckerberg and those guys, right? So yeah, they're wearing their sneakers.
But I heard they're expensive though.
Those sneakers are like a fucking $1,000. I mean, they are wearing sneakers and jeans and hoodies, but the hoodie happens to cost fucking $800. The sneakers are another $1,000. The jeans are $700. You know, don't think that they're running around wearing the clothes that we wear, right? You know, the...
yeah, exactly. This outfit today is incredibly expensive.
No, it's actually not. The other
it's
way
really
around.
Not.
It was the other way around.
Oh, right? I'm sorry. It was the other way. Okay,
They may look like poppers, but they buy clothes like pop stars.
Yeah. Well. Ooh. So. Oh, damn! You heard it here first, folks.
Heard it here first, absolutely.
But so the thing is this, though, like in regards to, like, tech folk, right, over in the Bay Area, they're making a statement by not dressing up like, you know, business casual, for example. They are making a statement by saying, no, I don't allow my clothes to define who I am. My actions do. And that is the mindset that they come from with this whole wearing the T-shirts and the hoodies and the flip-flops and all that.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm defined by what I do, not by what I wear.
Yeah, except that...
but they're secretly like $800.
Except, except that their whole outfit is pretty much, you know, the cost of a Wall Street banker's suit.
Got it. It's like Wall Street incognito.
Yeah, incognito. I love incognito.
What do you mean?
On Google.
You like incognito mode? Yeah. It doesn't really do as much as I think folk think that it does. It's really not that great.
Doesn't
of a
leave a history behind.
That's all it does, basically, is not leave a
that's
history.
That's all I need to do.
Like, that's all I need. It does exactly what I needed to do, Chad. Fair enough. Okay.
So what do you guys think about the constant, like, current state of affairs as far as Trump being silent and, you know, all those states, they confirming Biden's victory and just guys still... How you think will play out? I mean, the guy will be just hanging on to rails when they you know, trying to pull him from the White House, or what's
good? I can almost envision that exact thing happening. Yeah. Like,
there's no mechanism to get him to leave. I'm not saying that I want him to leave or that I don't want him to leave.
There's just no mechanism in place to do it because no one's ever gotten evicted from the White House before.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. No, he's going to be like the first, like, what are they called? Froggers? Frogging? You know, where somebody like lives
squatters.
In.
No, squatter.
No. Squatting is different.
Okay.
Frogging, P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G, frogging, is where people will secretly live in, like, your house. Like, in your attic, or like in like, if you have a really big house that you don't necessarily use all of your rooms, these people will, like, they'll like find their way in.
Be in and out. Like
they literally live in your house without you knowing it, and they're coexisting in your house without your knowledge. This is called frogging.
Well, frogging, then it's just what it should be called is murder.
What?
Murder.
You're saying it's going to lead to that.
Imagine if you find someone, they live in your house.
Find like, somebody frogging in my fucking happened? House. That he's leaving out of there in a body bag.
It's literally, no, I get it. I'm with you. If somebody's in my house, if I come out like, and someone lets their guard down and they're like,
this happens to walk into the bathroom.
In my fridge. Yeah, like, no, they're like taking a snack out of the fridge or something like that. Yeah. They're probably not going to make it out of the front door because that's just going to, I mean, come on. It's just craziness, but it has happened. There has been numerous stories where like somebody's like, where I always hear this weird noise. And then like, find like there's this weird hidden spot behind the wall or like
the attic or something.
Yeah. Or like some like hidden room, like that's accessible somehow, you know, you can tell somebody's been living there. It's crazy. This is a real thing.
Yeah, it's true.
There was actually a story, and I think I read this on Reddit, where this guy was like, look, I have a dark secret. I had this house that I loved and I sold, but what the owners know, I couldn't leave it. No. He's like, what the owners don't know is that in the backyard, hidden is like a underground bunker, and that's where I live now.
What?
He still lives in a bunker, like in the backyard of the house that he used to own. I would
straight up utopia his ass.
Yeah, you'd pluck an eyeball out.
What was it, salt or bleach?
Salt, bleach, and spoon.
Well, or it was supposed to be salt, bleach, or spoon.
No, it was like a progressive, it's going to be first salt, then bleach.
Then you scoop it out.
Then the spoon. Yeah. It was not a pleasant, I'm sure it wasn't.
He seemed pretty chipper afterward.
I think he was one of those characters that actually felt like empowered by the fact that he had an eyeball scooped out by like an assassin.
Wasn't that a thing back in the day?
I've never heard of this before.
I heard a story. There's like a thing back in the day, like royal, like kings and queens or whatever. They would like scoop people's eyes out if they were like inferior to them. Like they were scared they were going to take the throne. Because apparently like being royalty was like a god's gift. Mm-hmm. So they would pretty much ruin like your eyesight or something if they thought you were a threat.
There's lots of other ways you could do that, I would think. I wonder how you get to that point. You're like, okay, they want to take the throne. I'm just going to scoop their eye out with a spoon.
Well, I mean, everybody does it, right?
Kim
Jong-un, when he poisoned his, I don't know, whoever it was, right?
Yeah.
RB is not his name. The new Saudi Arabia kid.
Honestly, I don't know his name.
Yeah, but I mean, he took his whole family, essentially, and including the other one, the billionaire, what's his name? I forget these guys' names, but...
Not sure.
He took him, and he straight up locked him up, and you know, in order to take over the throne, he forced his way in there, but he locked him up, like, in a Four Seasons hotel.
That's not being locked up, but okay.
Well, they couldn't leave. I mean, they were there for months, you know, until he took over the throne. So, it's a long time tradition of killing those or could take over the throne.
Taking out the competition.
Or challenging you. You know? So, yeah, scooping out eyeballs or taking out a tongue, you know, wouldn't.
Something.
Or just spiking them.
Like literally dropping them. Or
like the original Dracula. What was his name?
Pikes. Putting him on a pike. Yeah.
Who was that? It was the Impaler. Vlad the Impaler.
Vlad the Impaler. No, he was Romanian, right?
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. That got kind of a dark real fucking quick.
It happens from time to time. We go dark every now and then.
We do. Yeah. Dark is good.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Without darkness, there's no lightness.
Oh, that's true. It's such a beautiful statement.
It's a profound statement from Dennis, people. You're welcome.
Pretty sure that was from a movie.
Excuse me?
I know that was from a movie, and I'm trying to place which movie that was from.
It sounds like a Disney movie. You know,
was it?
Something they would say.
Dennis?
Why are you trying to put me on Front Street?
Dennis is watching too many Disney cartoons with his with his daughter. Which one was it, Dennis?
You know, she hates Disney.
Oh yeah, that's right. You did say that. Yeah.
She won't. I mean, she won't watch it. She likes the dolls and stuff, but she won't watch Disney.
Like the new Disney or the old Disney? Like any Disney?
Any of it. She doesn't like to watch
much of any.
Kids nowadays want to watch like 5-minute videos of other kids
playing.
Pretty much. Like they won't sit through a movie. I mean, I can't get the kid to sit through a movie for the life of me.
Well, okay, she's 5. My daughter's 4, so they're pretty close in age. And yeah, Eva is definitely not at the point where she will sit through an entire movie. She's getting pretty close, but she's not there yet. But
mine
she will watch.
Will not.
Well, no, okay. So she'll have her like tablet, and she'll watch YouTube, and she'll like there'll be 5 minute videos or whatever, 15, yeah. 20, yeah, maybe sure, 25, sure. And she'll go through and she'll watch numerous of these at a time. But I'm like, I just don't get it. These shows, well, if you want to call them shows, it's just like somebody like made a video. It's like when, like if I was a kid and I had like a VHS and I just made my little home videos for fun and sure. Just started to like if YouTube existed
yeah,
back
put them
then
on YouTube.
That's basically what it is.
That's
I'm
what
like
they're doing. Yeah.
This
yeah.
is insane and they get like millions of views, right? It's just
I've
crazy.
I've taken the iPad away from my daughter on school days.
Uh-huh.
And so what we do is obviously we'll do homework and then we'll play chess, right? So we're okay. You know, I'm teaching her 5-year-old kid to play chess just to get her, you know, get her brain kind of, you know, developing in the right way.
Sure.
You know? And sometimes, unfortunately, my wife decides that she wants to jump in on the game to help my daughter. My daughter then eventually walks away.
Because, and now you're playing yeah. becomes, with your wife instead.
It becomes a competition.
Competition, yeah.
You know, and my wife and I are both very competitive. And I, sorry, baby. And I keep kicking her ass. You know, the other day, in fact, we didn't even get to do the homework because we got into this chess match.
Come on.
With my wife. We forgot to do my daughter's homework and then she had to do it in the morning before school.
Awesome.
So,
wow.
As a result of
so that whole trading thing of thinking a certain way is working out really well with I mean, the chessboard.
Well, she's playing and she's there watching. And
she understands the game?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
She, I mean, for the most part. Well, okay, she knows where to put the pieces and how
yeah,
to move,
yeah, yeah.
right? But she, you know, the theory or
yeah,
the.
Yeah.
The strategies,
like
not,
the long game,
is
not
yeah, yeah,
necessarily
yeah.
Not there, right.
jammed just yet.
No, not yet, but
should get yeah. there.
It's a good game to start thinking that way. I mean, there's a story or like a series of stories or articles. There may even be a book about it at this point, and it's called something along the lines of making a genius, and it covers like this family, husband and wife that actually I don't think they're even married. They basically made a contractual agreement to make geniuses. So they
right.
they didn't even necessarily love each other. It's not like they got together
yeah,
out
sure.
of love.
Yeah.
They like those they decided they're like
the kid, yeah.
hey, you're really intelligent.
Geniuses, right?
I'm really intelligent. Let's just make some more intelligent people. Let's see
okay.
let's do this. And they're like, "Yep, okay, cool." So they like had kids and I don't know if they ever got married or not, but yeah, they basically put a whole program together to make these kids super intelligent. And the way that he did it is he focused on chess.
Yeah.
Chess?
Yeah, chess, you know, gets you to thinking 3, 4, 5, 10 steps ahead.
Yeah.
And, you know, that creates success. And it just, you reprogram your brain, right? You always stay ahead of everything because you've thought it out, you know? And then you also are thinking of the onslaught coming from the other side, right? And
what so could happen?
Yeah.
How
and,
it might
and
play
so
out?
You're right. So, you know, you're prepared. It's a great way to... you know, not only keep yourself sharp, but yeah, for kids, it's an amazing way to make them, you know, geniuses.
Make them geniuses.
Geniuses.
When I was in like middle school, I was actually on the chess team.
Would you really?
I really was. I have not played chess probably since then, and I can't remember. I mean, I know the general concepts, but
yeah.
I don't even remember how to play anymore. Like, I
yeah.
literally have no idea.
Yeah.
Well. Again, I know how they move. I could probably play your daughter, and she could probably kick my ass because
I don't think so.
She
yet.
Probably knows more than I.
But I do know that my 11-year-old nephew, which you've met, he will kick both of our asses. In
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. He was in some serious
competitions.
No, serious training. You know.
Oh.
And yeah. So
nice. Very cool. I mean, it's definitely not a bad hobby to have.
No, it's not. Amazon, you know, $19 chessboard. You got some family time and you had some teaching moments, right? I mean, you can't go wrong.
It's true.
Can't go wrong.
Well, you can if you like move the pieces the wrong way.
You could, but yeah. At my house, you're swiftly corrected.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Like yeah. With a ruler, you like, slap the hand.
No glove.
Oh glove.
Rubber gloves.
Got it.
Wrong way, smack.
Who was it that?
Plato.
Plato.
Yeah, not the kind that our
exactly
play with.
Right.
The guy
Plato, not the
the philosopher.
Dough.
Yeah, not the dough.
The man, not the dough.
The man, not the dough.
Nice.
You should have more to talk about. What?
We have the same amount of
they're
questions.
Playing, they're talking about chess. I have nothing. I have no idea about chess.
You've never played chess?
No.
Never?
No.
Never.
But I could beat anyone at dominoes.
I play actually.
How do you play dominoes?
Like the Mexican train domino? Is that what it's called? Mexican train.
Well, I play.
Right?
I don't know if it's a different way. How do you play it? You get the seven, then you like.
But it's not just about matching the dominoes.
No,
right?
We play with your partner or whatever, your points and stuff like that.
Right, so you're based on five.
I'm good at dominoes.
Oh, we should play dominoes. Yeah. I'm excellent at dominoes.
Yeah. I'll play some dominoes. Yeah. I don't remember. It's been a long time, but I'm a pretty fast learner.
Let me see your points on multiples
you
of
get,
five.
You lose the points. How many points you lose, you get flicks like this.
What game are you playing? Is this like Russian dominoes?
Yeah, I play, you know. So you have to be strong to win. Otherwise, you get those at the end.
You get your licks. Nice. No, like when we were away and we were playing some poker for a few hours.
Oh, yeah, we did.
I had.
We also had quite a bit to drink.
I don't know what you mean. I don't remember that.
Oh. Yeah.
I was probably the least seasoned player, but I still made it to... I didn't win. I got second place.
Second place is the first loser.
I know. But was it Dennis?
No.
I'm sorry.
He's like, no, it was not me.
Yeah, poker's not my thing. Blackjack, though?
That's Dennis's game.
Blackjack?
Yeah, never lose.
Never?
No.
Never lost a...
I've never walked out of a casino with less money than I've walked in with. Maybe sometimes same amount of money I walked into.
But that's not really losing.
Yeah. I mean, you get to play for a few hours and have fun. But
yeah, I'm so terrible at blackjack. The last time I tried blackjack, it lasted maybe 15 minutes. And I'm like, okay, I've lost enough money. Yeah, I'm already, I'm a walk out. I'm going to go back to the craps table now.
I'm unlucky with casinos.
Unlucky with cards?
Yeah. Anything, the slot machines, anything.
Everyone's my unlucky sister, with slot machines.
My sister, everything she plays, she don't even know how to play it. She wins money every single time. But
maybe
I always
that's
lose.
The thing, is she doesn't know how to play it, right? I mean, so it's kind of like...
just like ignorant ignorant winning.
The wish for the best,
right,
you know?
Right,
yeah. Yeah. I've tried blackjack, and I definitely do not have an appropriate strategy. Unless losing is your strategy, then I'm amazing.
I used to have a friend. We used to go on a... So he would play Baccarat was his game, right?
Okay. Also know nothing about.
Yeah, me neither.
Other than what the board looks like.
They would let me into the high rollers area just because he was there. And I could play with like a $10 chip, for instance, which is not the way you play in the high rollers area. But just because I'm there with the guy, right? But I mean, he could be down hundreds of thousands of dollars at any given time. And they've sealed off the entire high rollers area for him. And so he'll go to the blackjack for 15, 20 minutes. And he'll fucking get that $200,000 back and then go right back to the Baccarat table.
What?
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting like way of doing it. So he's like just trying to get better at Baccarat?
No, I mean, no. The guy like created a program to teach himself and like all the, you know, I mean, he created an actual program to learn how to play this. And that was what he did, you know? I mean,
which one? Blackjack?
No, Baccarat.
Oh, so he was teaching himself how to. So when he would lose, he'll go to blackjack, make money.
No. He was already
back.
Playing. He was already playing for many, many years. But he, like I said, he created a program to train himself more, right? Huh. How to become better and so on and so forth. And but yeah, there was days when, yeah, I mean, listen, the guy used to come and show me checks from like, you know, his last trip to Vegas and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I think the last time I really talked to him much, I mean, he was like $6 million up for the year. You know, and
just from like casinos,
from gambling. Yeah, that's all he does. He gambles.
That's his.
That's how he makes money. Like, that's how he does for a living.
Well, his father did own half of iDrive before it was before it was anything. So, yeah, he had plenty of money. So, with that said, well, you know, that was what he did. He gambled.
So technically, he is one example of somebody who can do what they love and never work a day in their life.
That is true. That is true. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Full circle.
Full circle.
Yeah. So we were driving one day to Cape Canaveral to get on one of those casino boats.
Yeah. So to put out in international waters and
Come back.
Yeah. So his girlfriend, which was my wife's friend. So anyway, we're driving there and we're already running late and she forgot her ID. So we had to turn around and come back to Orlando to grab her.
And you're
her
already, purse. Already almost in Cape Canaveral at this point?
We're not almost in, but we're
you're already late, though. You're behind.
We were already going to be late, right?
Got it.
So, but then we had to turn around and come back to Orlando. Like, no shit. What it took was, like, a phone call. And that fucking ship sat there and waited for
them. They stopped the boat.
They stopped the boat. We got there, and people were fucking literally looking over the side of the boat. And as we're coming into this stupid boat, and there was just some hating going on.
You know, how late were you guys?
probably like 45 minutes.
Okay, well, that's
not that bad.
I mean, it's not great, but 45 minutes. I mean, how long was the trip? Or how long was the boat?
You know, they do it. What they go out for like 3-4 hours, right?
Okay, so you just took almost a third of their or a quarter of their gambling time.
Yeah, but apparently he was much more important in terms of, you know,
how much money they're going to take from this guy.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah.
That's how the world works, people.
I mean, he'll go to one casino, lose a bunch of money, go to that casino, make a bunch of money, but then, you know, they're like, okay, next time he comes here, he's gonna win, but let's get him to come here so he can lose. Uh-huh. And I mean, it's just a constant trading of
money.
You know, probably hundreds of millions of dollars, but at the end of the day, he walks out with $6 million for, you know, that 1 year, and that's
craziness. Mm.
But everything is comped. Rooms. I mean, he gets rooms for himself, but he also gets rooms for us, right?
Yeah, because already if you play big, they give you rooms.
Yeah, it used to be if you went to Vegas, like there was a lot more free stuff, food, a lot more comps, like for like average people, so to speak. Right, you know, not anymore. You have to spend some serious cash.
Money, you have to spend serious cash. So he's got his own at Council Bluffs in Tampa at the Hard Rock, right? Uh-huh. So the chef brings his food out personally, and
oh
he's
God.
Got a knife. He's got a steak knife with his name engraved on it. Here's your knife. And so one night we're like in the High Rollers area. He closes the whole High Rollers place out because he wants to be able to jump up and go to the blackjack table if he needs or whatever. Let anybody else in there. So it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and we're there and he's like, you guys hungry? I'm like, well, fuck, everything's closed. I mean, even though
isn't.
But they brought a table into the High Roller area. They, you know, dressed it all up with the cloth and blah, blah, blah. They woke the chef up to come and cook us a meal. And we ate a meal at 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
Just that kind of a lifestyle is just so insane. You're like, crazy. I literally can have whatever I want whenever I want it.
That's it. Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. I'm hungry. Fucking wake up the chef.
Yeah, if I did that, they'd be like,
uh-huh. Okay. You're hungry?
You're hungry?
There's a McDonald's across the street.
Exactly.
24-hour McDonald's.
Yeah, or go to 7-Eleven. They never shut down.
Yeah.
Get yourself a Snickers because you're dumb when you're hungry.
A nice 7-Eleven burrito to go.
Yeah, for some reason.
What about Bitcoin?
It's almost a 19K.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost.
There's a little bit of hedging going on now, apparently. And so they're setting the puts and stops, is it? Or this is terrible. What is it? Like you can, they're basically setting limits, right?
Yeah.
Apparently like the data is showing that some of the stakeholders are getting a little finicky on, or, you know, they're thinking things might either hopefully just level off or potentially go down a little bit.
Right.
But from the reports that I read, it was saying like it's likely just going to plateau for a bit because it's just, it can't go on at this
rate
forever.
Yeah.
Right?
No, there's going to be a correction at some point. But I mean, listen, once you're in the money, right, you're in the money. So correction is fine. It's not a big deal. Even
right.
if it's a 10-20% correction before it starts to go right back up. I started buying it at $6,700, right? So, you know, I'm in the money, right? So it's let it go down 20%. I mean, I'm still,
who cares, you
know, right?
Yeah.
They're predicting this thing's going to hit $300,000 to $400,000 by
2025. Yeah,
2022
for 400,000.
310 by the end of next year.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
I hope so.
That would be that'd be awesome. Yeah, I read a now. I'm sure there's probably different, like a few different predictions, right? So what I read was by like 2021. It would be around like around 100,000 per Bitcoin, and then by between 2023 and 2025, it would be between, you know, up to around 400,000. But I'm sure they're kind of like similar in time frames, a year or two,
right,
from within each other. But that's just nuts to me.
It's become mainstream. You know, when it went up to $20,000 a few years ago, right?
Yeah,
like 2000. Everybody was talking about it. Like, oh, have you seen Bitcoin? And I kept saying, you know, I kept telling people on Facebook and this and that. You know, like,
don't do it.
The fuck out of it.
You told me that.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, I already bought a little bit. And that we were just talking about it on the last one. I bought like $100. I'm like, I just want to see what happens. You know?
And it tanked.
Oh, it literally went down like within like 3 or 4 days from when I bought it.
Yeah,
it went down to, okay. So I'll look at it from the money I bought. It dropped by 60%. So it went. I went from $100 to like $40. And then it dropped even more at a certain period of time. It went down to like 20. I had like $20, and I'm like,
so okay. You know, listen, now it's being used as a as almost compared to gold.
Yeah.
You know, so it's being used as a hedge against inflation, number one, and a safe haven asset because now you've got PayPal's and Squares and JP Morgan Chase and all these, you know, institutions getting into it, right? So the likelihood that, you know, it takes that kind of a dive again is very unlikely because you've got a lot of big players in it right now.
Right. Right? There's more money into
holding
it.
Holding a lot of this stuff, you know, and they're not going to, you know, dump. I mean, PayPal's not going to dump $50 million worth of Bitcoin tomorrow, right?
Yeah. So they're just implementing like a whole new service. So like they're planning on this to be around and stabilize, I'm sure, pretty much now.
Yeah.
Because they
Ackerman
said days.
Doesn't like it. Is it Ray Dalio or Ackerman? Who's the one who keeps...
I think it was Ackerman. Because I think I just read something. Said, I'm still, it's still not my thing.
The government can come in and they can... They
no,
can,
I mean...
Blah, blah, blah. Well, that's the point of the decentralized currency.
Exactly.
The government can't come in and do shit about it.
Right.
No, I mean, the point is the strongest currency in the world, typically backed up by the strongest army, military. This is how it always been. It's always will be. This is why safe haven issues. Why Switzerland? Swiss franc is Swiss heaven. Currency also one of those things because
haven.
Yeah. So during there is a belief that during Second World War or First World War was untouched by major wars. There's a reason there is a belief. Everything has value only when people believe that it has value.
Sure.
It's very simple.
Yeah.
So Bitcoin right now, which is gaining traction, that people believe that it has value. If U.S. government comes in one day and says, you know what, we actually going to take over. Like the way they did is the Fort Knox in the 30s. They just took gold from everyone. They made mandatory everyone to surrender gold. So one day they can come in and say,
you surrender cannot. Your Bitcoin?
No, they're going to say, you cannot.
Surrender your Bitcoin.
You cannot use or trade any Bitcoin in U.S. currency other than Bitcoin or whatever they're going to call it, U.S. coin we introduce. If they say that.
Which they already did. Right?
It will plunge.
There's a dollar. There's already a dollar coin and a U.S. coin. I mean, they're already trying, but it's
no. It has to be like big regulation. There's possibility can be done, and then if they decide to take control, like over government always take control of something.
Listen, can't take control of fucking TikTok, let alone. Bitcoin, okay.
Yeah, but this is there's a little. I think there's higher stakes here. But
we're talking about remote possibility. We're not talking about big. Big possibility.
Right.
There is a possibility. You have to understand that risk exists. It doesn't like, I mean, listen, I invested in Bitcoin myself. But only thing I don't understand is so many of those coins. There's like thousands of them now. And then people put money everywhere. This I don't understand. Why there's eCoin and Litecoin and, you know.
Well, because Bitcoin is a finite resource like gold, right? Or diamonds.
Yeah.
It's coded to run out at some point. You're only going to ever have 21 million Bitcoin. After 21 million,
I think it's 21 billion.
No, 21 million.
21 million Bitcoins.
You can no longer...
It can't be mined
anymore. You can't produce any more Bitcoin after 21
million. I understand. How about Ethereum and the other ones? Like, I don't know what I don't even know those names.
I bought Ethereum at $142. It's
five something. Right, almost six, I think.
Yeah, almost $600 right now.
So to be completely honest, I have not done very much research on like blockchain and how some of these other cryptocurrencies have any kind of like actual value to them. But like with Bitcoin, they, you know, part of it again is that there is a finite amount of it that can be created or mined, and there is an actual cost to mining it. So like if somebody were to mine one Bitcoin, the power consumption cost in itself is like $9,000, almost $10,000 in energy to produce that.
I get that Bitcoin. I get the concept of Bitcoin, but I don't understand why there is easy to like come up with some kind of coin, just you know, and then announce that there's a new coin. You know, I don't know what the name you want to give it, and then you start collecting people money to invest in this kind of thing. So it just is. This is what danger of this. It's just because there's so many of them, I don't even know what is what.
Yeah, there are so many. I only invested in Bitcoin and in Ethereum, and that's it. Like there's so many of them. Like you said, like there's a list, and it keeps growing and growing. I have no interest in it.
So many of these new ones were created simply for the reason to attract $30 million and walk out with it. I mean, so many of these smaller Bitcoins, you put money there, and that's it. Your money's gone, right?
Yeah.
Along with the scammer who created the Bitcoin. But it's the same thing in stocks. You know, for many years, people have been creating these penny stocks, right? And then they go out there, get a bunch of money, and it turns out the whole thing is a fucking sham, right? And that person has now walked away with whatever they collected. So, it's the same.
Regulation is coming. So basically, it is already there. So regulation. So it has to be regulation where you cannot just write a piece of paper, okay, it's a coin. You collected all this money, and what?
Well, everybody that's using it or is partaking in the purchasing and distribution of the cryptocurrency, there's a ledger, right? So they keep track of all this. So I think that it's like the people that originally, or the original plan for it was, is that it was like an agreement that we're going to use this decentralized currency, that we're not being delayed and taxed and all this on from different countries, right? So if you wanted to send money to somebody in England, it didn't take 3 to 5 days or whatever. It was instant because it's peer-to-peer.
No, right? I mean, look, I read an article in Russia, right? There was a couple guys, they created actual exchange, imagine, of the Bitcoin. So they had this wallet. There was a $45 million of the coin stored. It's somebody else's Bitcoins or whatever.
You know,
they stored.
Right.
So, you know, the Secret Service guys, they arrested the guy. They beat the passcode out of the guy. They took
it. Took his $45 million.
And they got $45 million. So money's gone. Exchange is gone. Everything's gone. So my point is, and so I read those stories like.
But that was a while ago too, though.
No, well, I mean, a few years ago. But still, all those drug money. Imagine all those, like, nowadays, those cocaine, those traffickers, all those guys, they right now, they pay each other with Bitcoin, and because it's not
true. Not tracked. By any government, at least.
Yeah, so you could register this wallet to some random guy, and then you transfer from random guy to another random guy in Bitcoins. Yeah, there is a trace. But you know what I'm saying? So it's like, to me, it's...
This is why it took so long for me to get into it, because I'm like, this seems like this is going to be used by, like, heinous people.
I mean, cash has been used by heinous people.
It's true. I'm with you. But it's like, it kind of felt that in its, like, early days, in its inception, Bitcoin felt like it was synonymous with crime.
I don't think it was created for that purpose, but that's...
No, I agree.
That's how it got used,
exactly.
Right? But, you know, again, cash is the same thing. I mean, you know, 5,000 years ago, it was... pigs or cows or horses, whatever you used to trade.
Shells,
Well, whatever you used to trade with, right?
I mean, Well, I mean, the same thing could be said for the internet. The internet was created to share information across, you know, vast space and send things instantly and share in educational information and all this useful stuff. And now it's used to share pictures of cats and porn.
And it's for dumbass people to share their dumbass
thoughts
and then think, hey, there's somebody else who thinks as dumb as I do. I must be right.
Yeah. Well, but my point is that's like you can create almost anything and have the absolute best intentions. Yeah, no,
people will find a way
to literally just tarnish and like corrupt your amazing idea. Somebody will do it.
So, and again, to me, it's all about... the number of dollars they keep printing. Yes. This is all it is to it. So they keep printing U.S. dollars. They keep giving zero interest, like Federal Reserve putting out the free money. They keep pumping this, you know.
Just devalues the
devalues the currency. Over, so people desperate to buy something, they will not lose value. So, but at the end of the day, it's at some point in the future, music will stop. And then just please, guys, I mean, if you investing in those things, I invested myself, but... I'll be watching. Listen, my door is open, right? So I'll be watching the door. So just keep mindful. Be mindful. Don't go crazy. Don't go crazy. If you open this thing, you keep going up. But the moment you realize that the music coming to an end, they will raise interest rates, and then they will not print money anymore. Just keep in mind. Because there's really no – there's air. You know what I'm saying? Tomorrow will be maybe $400,000. But before you know it, if something like this comes, you wake up to maybe, you know, $10.
that would be a sad day. I just invested my entire savings into Bitcoin. Oh, did you see it just dropped to $5 a coin? No, I'm done.
One in air.
Yes, you are now completely and utterly virtually and physically broke.
No, just don't be euphoric. It's not the same as like Apple stock, for example. The Apple stock cannot I mean, just an example, right? I'm just throwing out there. They have a cash on the balance sheet, which is like billions and billions of dollars, like $200 billion. So no matter how you look at it, you cannot go lower than $200 billion they already have.
Sure, I understand.
The value, you know what I'm saying? So they have cash behind it. There's a certain level there is a give you security. So it's not the same as holding United States debt, for example, even though they keep printing money, but still keep holding United States treasuries as a guaranteed investment. All financial, if you think about it, all financial system built on a notion that the safest investment in the world is U.S. treasuries. It's just the way it is. Like this is the main thing which holds the whole economy and everything. This is the safest instrument possible. And then you cannot dispute that.
Right.
So you just have to take it for granted.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? This is the thing. So just don't, what I'm trying to say is don't treat Bitcoin investment as
like a magic bullet, right? Like
exactly. It's not, just it's going to be, oh, you know, don't get euphoric. You might see even $1 million for this thing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was told today 400,000. It's coming. So just don't, you know, just be mindful.
Yeah. I mean, it went from like 30 cents to.
I was telling him, there was like a YouTube guy, Mr. Beast.
I actually know who that is
now. Yeah. He became rich and he's like 20 years old. From Bitcoin.
Yeah, and he'll do things like he'll buy a house, furnish it, and then order a pizza and
literally set it on fire.
No, he'll tip the pizza guy with the house.
Yeah. He does crazy stuff.
Weird.
Yeah.
But super weird. Probably gets a whole lot of YouTube views from it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a guy, a guy, I think, I don't know, did we talk about this? A pizza delivery guy who got tipped in Bitcoin.
We didn't talk about it, but I did hear about this.
Yeah, he got tipped in Bitcoin and held on to it, and that pizza delivery made him a millionaire, you know? Yeah. Back when Bitcoin was like, you know, I don't know, 50 cents, you know, or whatever the case is. You know, he got 8, 10, 20 Bitcoin, and, you know, then it hits 20 grand, right?
Yeah. And now he's got pizza in the belly.
Let me tell you another. I watched this. Listen, actually, I watched that actual, I think it was on one of the Netflix, I believe, or, you know, somewhere I watched it. But anyway... There's a guy, but it's not in, I think it's in UK or Scotland, one of those countries. He had actually the wallet with, but it was when Bitcoin was like $3,000.
Yeah.
He was telling that it actually holds $50 million worth of Bitcoin back then. Mm-hmm. So he says in today's money, it's almost like $300 million. So the government over there, but problem was that somehow, something or another, he left his computer on the desk and his girlfriend came in and threw it in trash, something. Oh. And it was actual wallet with all this thing.
They had the physical ledger.
So he doesn't know password because it's very like 15, like, I don't know, like huge password. Like
yes, I remember so that. It's cannot, like a hash. It's like this huge.
Yeah, and the guy is actually crying because
he lost $50 million.
They put it in a dumpster. And then, but he walks around this place where they hold it, but there's actually like a landfill in Scotland, right?
So now he
walks
spends all these days
and he's trying to
search for it.
Yeah, he's trying to petition government to actually start excavation work, like remove this thing and then find it. And he's thinking, well, if I find this, but they told him, listen, actually, it will probably cost you more money to find this thing. So he's trying to kind of leverage. But problem is, even if you find this thing, it might be already destroyed. You're not be able to recover data.
Lesson. So. Yeah. Lesson to be learned by this. Do not cheat on your girlfriend and leave your Bitcoin wallet on the desk where she can throw it out with the rest of your shit.
Wait.
Is that what he did?
I don't think he cheated on her.
Why else would she throw his stuff
Maybe
out?
He was a slob, Dennis. He was a mess.
Computer? You don't throw away a laptop.
No, it wasn't like he had it on like a... You can get the... You can get a physical wallet.
Drive, something.
And she probably was like, and threw it out. But it's a physical
that's
drive.
That's like me throwing away your microphone.
Well, I get it. I'm just saying, like.
Well, your SD card.
Or maybe she didn't know what it was. She's like, what the hell is this? And I mean, that seems weird, but yeah.
Yeah, don't shoot on
What the hell is this right here?
She probably was mad at him and just
she
threw it away.
She took it.
I'm throwing away his wallet.
She threw away his sneakers. Everything was on the front
line.
She
was mad.
You know, including the wallet, the Bitcoin wallet.
Well, that's the worst breakup.
It would have been cheaper to marry her, have six kids, pay her alimony and child support for the next 30 years than to cheat on her while not married.
Yeah, but now she's got, well.
She doesn't have anything either.
She doesn't have anything either.
No, yeah. Now they're both broke.
And very unhappy. And he's apparently just, stinky because he's.
People don't cheat. Just, again, guys, you know, just don't listen. If you have those Bitcoins, just make sure they stored safe somewhere.
Don't throw it away.
Exactly. Don't throw your Bitcoin
away.
Don't
piss off your girlfriend.
Don't piss off your girlfriend and don't throw your Bitcoin in the garbage. Words to live by. More we're always giving words.
We're giving a lot of
words to live by.
Especially today, a lot of words.
Yes, lots of them.
It's about time that we stop giving words.
I will agree with you on that.
Yeah.
So
start with action. Listen, Chad, let's start with action. Start donating your bitcoins.
Yes, actively taking donations now.
It's a great cause.
I will take fractions of a Bitcoin from you.
Fractions of fractions.
Fractions and fractions. I will take even one Satoshi at a time, if you will. Like, I guess when the individual chunks are called Satoshis.
Satoshis.
Sprinkle.
Potato, potato. Oh, it's Satoshi instead of Satoshi? I like Satoshi. Well, on that note, everybody, thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of All Up In Your Business with First Union Lending. Follow us on all the social media platforms. We're there. You can find us. They are listed in the show notes. You can also send us an email to podcast@firstunionlending.com. Send us those questions. We want to help. Bye.
Bye.
Dennis out.